Ah, that's a terrific wing. I love this shape.
Hey, do us a favor, pal.
Name's Liddy. Gordon Liddy.
Gord, take a look at the seventh Fetzer valve, will you? I think it's been sticking.
Probably the humidity.
That's funny. No, what I think it is myself is the bypass line.
That could be the bypass line, yeah. Maybe I should take a look at it.
Gordo, back here.
Don't tell me my business, boy. Just checking the luggage. Somebody ought to clean these windows. There is a tremendous buildup of gook all over them. Look at that. You use a lot of fuel to go to Utah?
That's what I always ask you.
Burns enough to go to South America and back.
South America and back? Is that right?
Yeah, but I always kid him about it. I say, what are you doing up there? You doing some stunt flying or something?
What's he say?
Well, he don't say nothing. He just gives him that look. You know, he's got that look.
Yeah, he don't say nothing. He just gives him that look.
Well, sure, he's the boss. Here, let me take a crack at this Fetzer here.
Gord.
Yeah, I know where it is. I'm just getting a bird's eye view here, and,
What do you think? It's the bypass line, right?
I think it's the bypass line, yeah. I'm gonna need some pliers and, a set of 30-weight ball bearings.
What?
Yeah, tell you what, I gotta go to my truck. Fred gets here before I'm back. You can tell him to start without me.
What the hell you need ball bearings for?
Oh, come on, guys. It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays. Now, you prepare that Fetzer valve with some 3-in-1 oil and some gauze pads. And I'm going to need about 10 quarts of antifreeze, preferably Prestone. No, I'll make that Quaker State. Wash those windows. They've got filth and muck on them.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Mr. Stanwyck, you are confirmed on Pan Am Flight 441 to Rio de Janeiro tomorrow evening, 11 p.m., first class.
That's terrific. Thank you.
You reconfirmed this morning.
You bet I did. I'm a bear for detail. I hope there's nobody sitting next to me. See, I always travel first class, and I take both seats up. I'm in bridge construction. These fold-outs take a tremendous amount of space up, and I need the space.
I'm afraid there is someone sitting next to you.
Ah, for God, Don. Who is it, Mr. Sinlinden?
No, the name's Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh? Ah, is that Morris or Pierre?
Sally Ann Kavanaugh.
Sally Ann, well, terrific.
In fact, you purchased the ticket for Ms. Kavanaugh.
Doesn't mean I want her sitting next to me, does it?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Okay, denizens of YouTube, more Fletch clips, please. Please. You know, it's one of the funniest movies of all time, or at least of our time. Yeah. And there are literally, I don't know, two Fletch clips on there. I had to go to Funny or Die for those. Yeah. I mean, there's
so surprising.
Hardly any. And Fletch is, like, eminently perfect for YouTube. I mean, there's so many scenes in there that are quick and easy to excise from the movie and then pop onto YouTube. And there's hardly anything on there. I don't know if that's a copyright thing or what's going on. But, like I said, I had to go to Funny or Die for those two clips. And literally, I mean, I was glad because they're funny as hell clips. And that...
Yeah.
I mean, when he's talking about that engine and the ball bearings, and he's just, well, I got to draw you guys a map, and he leans up against the engine part, and it burns him, and he goes, hey! That just cracks me up every time.
And I just for the first time ever Googled Fetzer valve, and it's not a real thing. I was very disappointed. It's a completely made-up thing. So it's a fictional engine part.
Yeah. I mean, really think Chevy Chase, I think, hit his high watermark as far as funny in the first Fletch movie. And then it was kind of all downhill from there, wasn't it? I mean,
Fletch was after the original Vacation, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that's probably true.
We talked about this last week, where it was like European Vacation was one of the movies that I walked out of.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so bad.
That was a really bad movie.
And John Hughes wrote that fucker. I mean, it was...
No.
Yeah.
The second one?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I mean, I've had this track record of inaccurately delivering movie news, but I'm going to look that up now. because now I'm fairly sure that he wrote that. I mean, John Hughes wasn't infallible as far as...
Wait, Amy Heckerling directed that?
Amy Heckerling?
That's what IMDb says. That doesn't sound right
And she directed Fast Times, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just burning hell for doing European Vacation.
Oh, yeah, John Hughes.
Did Look Who's Talking and Clueless. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's really surprising that she had anything to do with that big turd.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was John Hughes.
But Christmas Vacation was redeemable.
Yeah, Christmas Vacation was great.
Some good stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then that awful, and Vegas.
Vegas Vacation.
Vacation was fucking awful. Was beyond awful. And then they did that Eddie, that Cousin Eddie spinoff.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should have been killed for him.
Oh, what the hell movie was that?
Yeah, that
that's a good question.
That was awful.
I have no idea. But maybe it was a direct-to-video hunk of shit or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Fletch, I mean, just absolutely the part he was born to play.
Yeah. And no one's better coming up with fake names than Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Mr. Slimlin.
And just that sort of nonsense talk, you know.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, just sort of blithering, you know, talk that just sort of comes out of his ass, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. And then what's the other one of my favorite fake name in Fletch was John Coctoston.
Yeah, Coctoston. And then he can't remember.
Coctoston.
It's John Slim. He's like, Coctoston? He's like, oh, I can't remember.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's an unusual name. Well, it's, what did he say, Dutch-Irish?
Something like that.
He's like, oh, that's a strange comedy. Well, so are my parents. Great.
But he's on his show right now on NBC, isn't he, that I've never seen and have no interest
in
ever watching?
Yeah, that campus, that whatever that is, yeah. I've never watched it either.
Doomed to be canceled is what it's called.
Just about everything is these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show, brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And I'm Bob, that's Elvis over there. We lots of stuff to talk about today, and I don't even know where to begin. So I'm just going to leave it up to you. We got Sarah Palin, we got Rush Limbaugh making ching chong voices, we got House Republicans voting to repeal health care. I've got lots of health care stuff to talk about. You know, there's just a variety of things that have occurred this week, and thank God, because there was a long period of time there where there was, it was just nothing happening in the news.
Yeah. And it's the 50th anniversary of JFK's inaugural.
That's right.
Which was assisted penned by our good friend Ted Sorensen, the late great.
Now, before we started the show, I noticed that Chris Matthews was going to be talking about the origins of the strange sentence structure of "ask not,"
mm-hmm.
of that
line.
He's
got a thing on Huffington Post about it.
Oh, he does.
Uh-huh.
And was that now knowing Ted Sorensen? That was his line, right? I mean, you guys never.
Well, no, it's and Matthews has a whole big and you know, there's actually two books. One is called "Ask Not," actually, but the other I can't remember the other one's name. But there are two entire books dedicated to nothing but the inaugural, and Tweedy mentions it in the piece he wrote for the Huffington Post, but you know, JFK was a Choate boy. Uh-huh. He went to Choate, which is one of those Connecticut, you know, prep schools, these Ivy League prep schools. And at Choate, they always used to say, and the she in this is Choate, what can she do? Don't ask what can she do for me, but what can I do for her? Her being Choate.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole Ted Sorensen never would never own up to anything, you know, of contributing anything. But the book "Ask Not" the entire book is fascinating about where all the different pieces came from. It wasn't that line wasn't Ted's alone.
Okay.
But he had you know, JFK was an amazing. Really a hardcore intellect. He doesn't get a lot of credit for it, but he used to dictate his speeches just straight into a dictabelt and really not need any editing. I mean, he would just spitball it onto a tape, and Evelyn Lincoln, his secretary since his Senate days, would type them up. And there are original drafts that are just, you know, almost exactly what he would say and really just off the top of his head. So he was really, really much sharper than people give him credit for.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say that because, you know, and I can only imagine what – and, you know, Joe Kennedy – was really sort of earmarked as being presidential material before he was killed in the war.
Joe Jr.
Joe Jr. And it was never really – they never really considered Jack as being, necessarily presidential material. And this is the internally in, within the Kennedy family. Yeah. And but he's an extraordinarily brilliant guy. I can only imagine how smart Joe Kennedy Jr. must have been.
Yeah.
If he was
Joe
the guy.
Was the superstar. He was the he was super handsome, just big and healthy and robust and, you know, just bam. And then he got blowed up over the Pacific, I think, carrying a big shitload of ammunition, and it exploded on him. And yeah, they did. You know, Jack was always the sickly one. He was always in poor health. And before shipping off, when in his teenage days, he had a really bad case of something. I can't remember. But it laid him up in bed, and he read nothing. He just read stacks and stacks of history books. He was just fascinated with history.
Yeah.
And he wrote, Why England Slept when he was like 18. It was fucking ridiculous. He wrote a book when he was just like 20. I mean, just unbelievably young. And it created a big – that book created a big buzz. And then, of course, Profiles in Courage. I mean, he was just – which Ted did write pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just an amazing intellect and, you know, just the perfect – presidential package, if you ask me. That guy was just badass.
Yeah, he really was. And
he really was. I mean, just badass. Any picture of him in his Ray-Bans makes me just want to kiss him right on the mouth.
Yeah.
You know? I just want to go to Arlington and dig his ass up and kiss him with those Ray-Bans on. He's just too cool for school.
He was
just a total badass.
Yeah. I mean, there was something about that period of time, too, where it just there was so much cool going on. That, you know, I mean, it's no wonder
he hung out with.
Yeah.
I mean, he hung out with the Rat Pack, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. And it's no wonder that a show like Mad Men is so successful, because it's got that great combination of just excellent writing, excellent characters, and it's fucking cool.
It is just fucking cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about, and it's really hard on me when I'm trying to stay on the wagon to watch Mad Men, because watching those guys drink makes me just want to drink.
Yeah.
Just because they make it look so cool. And I just want to live in a world where you can walk into your office at 11 a.m. and go right to the sideboard and pour yourself a highball, and they make smoking look cool. I mean, it's just everything that should not look cool looks cool.
Yeah,
with that show, and just the suits, and John Hamm is just a stunningly attractive man. It just the whole show just makes me just want to be, and I hate, you know, you and I as liberals, we hate the sort of throwback, oh, the good old days, you know, because look at how they treat women in that show.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, civil rights is just getting going, but still, there's just something to be appreciated there, just how cool they were.
Well, that's one aspect of this season, and they touched upon it in the first season too. In terms of the consequences of living that lifestyle.
Yeah.
And this season, I think they're starting to reveal that a little bit. Like, it's not an endless stream of, you know, bourbon and cigarettes. It's not gonna sustain someone in a high stress lifestyle for very long without having, you know, a heart attack.
And that's why it was so. I mean, after four seasons, to see Don collapse like that and really, really fall apart. I mean, there were a couple of episodes where he was boozed up so bad he was puking, and you finally get to see that. And then when, you know, he's almost outed to the government there in that whole subplot there. That, I mean, just to see him collapse that way was really eye-opening and powerful to see the effects of that life, you know. And then how people reacted too. I mean, the disgust that, you know, the people around him felt for him is really eye-opening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was to see him under that degree of stress and reacting to stress that much. Again, that's what made this past season. I've said this a million times on this show what made this past season one of the best seasons of the show, and probably one of the best seasons of any show ever in existence, was the fact that they finally humanized this heretofore robotic character who was just sort of, and that's, I mean, that was always my complaint about the show. It was very difficult for the first couple of seasons to like Don Draper.
You're not supposed to like any of those people.
But there's something that there ought to be something that should attract you to wanting to learn about the story of this character. It was difficult for me to want to know more about this guy because he was such a sinister, duplicitous kind of character.
Yeah.
But
unlikable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you remember, and going back to the effects of lifestyles, I mean, remember the first season where he tried to basically kill Roger Sterling.
Yeah.
Starts running up those stairs and preconceived. I mean, he really wanted to do that. And so he takes Roger out, gets them all liquored up, right?
Yep.
At whatever that is, that restaurant that they eat. And hauls his ass up what must have been 20 flights of stairs. And Roger has a heart attack. I mean, he gets into the offices of Sterling Cooper and basically collapses right there in the lobby and has to be hospitalized and, basically has emotionally falls apart too in the hospital.
Yeah.
And
Roger's a fascinating character. Yeah. I talk about really nothing there to like. I mean, he's just a real shithead. But the entire show, I really think that the entire show is built on this Randian, on this Ayn Rand philosophy, and every character is just in it for themselves, really. The driving principle behind it, the philosophy behind it, is it just every man for himself and woman.
Yeah.
And fuck the consequences. So, not the kind of life I want to lead, but it's fascinating to watch.
Well, yeah, I think the obvious metaphor in Don Draper is the fact that he's not what he seems, and neither is advertising, which is ironic given the fact that so many advertisers want to sign on to the show and actually emulate the show itself. If you see this past season, they did commercials within the show and it even fooled me going through on the DVR. They go, the show's back. Oh, but wait, it's a commercial.
Yep.
They actually made the commercials look seamless in terms of the production values and the costuming and I'm 3 seconds in, I'm going, who the hell are these characters? And it's a commercial. But I mean, the insanely subversive thing that Matthew Weiner is doing is he's actually picking apart the very people that allow, commercial television to exist.
Exactly. Yeah.
Getting
into the heads of the really analyzing the manipulation involved. And as a consumer, you sit back and go, Jesus, are they really that devious? And I mean, they really know us that well, and they do. I mean, it's all psychology, right?
That's right.
They had that one female character that Don was hot for a little while, who was the shrink. Remember? I can't remember her name, but really hot, and she worked in the office there to psychoanalyze everybody. And
she was sort of like the early focus group tester. She basically did market research.
Yep.
And this, I mean, so much of what we experience now and things that we take for granted are based upon psychological principles. I mean, if you look at, for example, you go into a McDonald's restaurant, you can't move the goddamn seats. Well, why is that? Because they don't want people lingering in a McDonald's. They don't want a movable, customizable atmosphere inside a McDonald's because they want you in, eating, and then out.
Yeah.
Get that table available for the next person. So what they do is they lock those goddamn chairs with iron bolts and bars that invariably I rack my knees on,
I bet you do.
These
days they're going towards a more bistro atmosphere, really. They've got Wi-Fi. Any place that'll give you free Wi-Fi is not looking to move you on and out. That's what I've always been fascinated by the business model at Panera, because they've always offered free Wi-Fi, and it's always been really good quality connection and stable and reliable, and it kind of makes sense. But to an extent, like, I can go in and buy a muffin at like 10 o'clock, go in and buy a muffin and a mug of coffee, and I can refill that fucking mug for 7 hours and mooch off their bandwidth. And I do not understand the economics of that. Maybe I'll buy myself a sandwich, but ultimately I'm not spending more than $20 over that 6 or 8 hours, and I'm using their place as an office.
Yeah, well, I think the psychology is that more people will end up buying food and additional kinds of drinks than will not. So, I mean, I think maybe you're the exception to the purchase rule.
I'll just refill my coffee all day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, which is obvious. I mean, I can go in there to a Panera, and they have outstanding iced tea. They're not really known for their iced tea, but they have really damn good, like, unsweetened iced tea.
Hmm.
And so I'll go in and use their Wi-Fi and just, suck down all their iced tea.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing they do that, like in my little – in Omaha, there's a Barnes & Noble – And then within walking distance, there's a Panera. And I would much rather spend my day in a Barnes & Noble just surrounded by books, because that's just how I am. I just love to be in a bookstore. But what Barnes & Noble doesn't do, and now they give it away. Now they're giving their Wi-Fi away, which they used to charge you. So I would always default to Panera. But now Barnes & Noble is free, the Wi-Fi, but they don't provide easily accessible power. Whereas every other booth at a Panera has got a plug under the table there somewhere. So I don't understand the places that offer the free Wi-Fi but then give you dirty looks when you want to plug your shit in.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
Well, and then, you know what? These are things that they need to start doing in airports too. And if this is becoming a general refrain on the show, I apologize. Every week we do some sort of rant on airline travel. But the fact that there is no readily accessible plugs, not only at the gates and in the terminal, but also on the airplane. How much of a drain would it possibly be to have, you know, plugs at in airline seats?
Yeah.
I mean, it can't possibly be that big of a power drain.
No. I mean, how much more expensive truck batteries in there?
Yeah. I mean, to charge an iPhone. I mean, seriously, how much electricity is that actually using? I mean, is that really going to drain down? Is that, as they say on West Wing, is my thing that I bought at Radio Shack going to
really going to flummox this thing?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, I think the future, the next generation of planes coming off the assembly line are going to all have track power running right along the fuselage, basically.
Yeah. I mean, they really have to do that because if you're traveling, your whole life becomes, where the fuck can I charge my device?
Yeah,
because I mean that's just it. I mean you're desperate to find that plug, and then invariably you find a plug, but 12 other people are in line, with plug trees and surge protectors all plugged into it, with 9 different people plugged in all at once charging their devices.
Yeah,
and so you end up 9 gates down, desperately hoping there's not any sort of changes with your flight while you're charging.
At the last airport I was in, every gate had a double phone, like public phone, like a pay phone kiosk at the gate. And each one of those double phone trees had AC power on both sides of the pole. That was awesome.
Really? So, and they didn't charge you for it. It wasn't like a pay per charge.
No, it wasn't one of those kiosks. No, it was just an old, each gate had a double, a payphone on a post, each one on each side, and each side of the post had AC power, and there was no end to the power there. So I was plugging in everywhere.
Mm, nice. Well, you're very lucky.
Yeah, and free Wi-Fi, so yay. Yeah.
I had to get one
eventually
of those.
We'll get there.
I don't get one of those power packs that you pre-charge and what's
I don't know how those work. How do you beam power into something?
Pads? That's like some sort of weird scientific miracle. I don't know how the hell those things work. But I get
one
of those.
I don't understand. One of our listeners, go to the blog or something and tell us how that works, because I don't understand how you just put something down on a pad and it magically charges something.
That's right.
Electromagnetism, it's got to be. But how does that work?
Because, I mean, if we're looking at wireless electricity, I mean, that's a pretty big step forward, one that I wholeheartedly embrace. If you've ever had to try to hook up or find a way to hook up a computer in a convenient way without having, like, a spaghetti of wires hanging out behind your desk, wireless electricity, please bring it on. Please. Yeah. Please.
Our future tumors, thank you.
Yeah.
Because someday, I mean, we're all just going to start growing second heads or, eyeballs in the middle of our foreheads or something. It just cannot be good. The broadband, the bandwidth surrounding us just cannot be good for us. I cannot imagine.
So going back to the anniversary of the inauguration the Kennedy inaugural address, I wonder if in 50 years historians are going to be attempting to parse a phrase like Sarah Palin said on the Hannity show, where she said she's worried about that trifecta thing. Do you have any idea what that trifecta thing is?
The trifecta thing. Yeah, trifecta. I saw that she just dropped that in there, and then she didn't elucidate on what that – does she mean the three branches of federal government? I don't know. I don't know what the fuck she's – but, I never know what the fuck she's talking about.
Does she mean a troika, a Russian troika? which is a dance.
She's done. The whole, I mean, Obama's got this bump now. He's up over 50%.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the callowness and the emptiness and the nothing there is starting to show.
Yeah.
You know, it's really starting. And the, you know, I've always said that, you know, that like if Roosevelt, if FDR was president in like the 80s, he'd have been nobody, right? FDR was FDR because he was president during the Depression and the fucking World War II. It's the times that make the people. And this thing that happened in Tucson, it shows the real delineation between the thinkers and the, you know, the real people and the fucking idiots, and the difference between what Obama said at the memorial and the callow, awful, insipid, bitchy thing that Facebook McFacebook put out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just, it shows when in tough times. This is the woman that some people think should be president. That's the kind of thing she says in the heart of a tragedy. That, you know, it's just terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
That anyone would take that fucking stupid ass seriously.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the inaugural that we'll really be talking about in 50 years is going to be Obama's second inaugural. Because that was Lincoln's big one, right? The second inaugural was Lincoln's big one.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, look out on the second. I'm really looking forward to the State of the Union this year and the second inaugural. And
yeah.
I think those are going to kick ass.
Well, as a next week's show, we'll be talking about the State of the Union probably for the most of the show. Because not only do you have the State of the Union, but then you have lots of dumb stupid in terms of the reaction that happens afterwards.
The Republican response.
Yeah.
Where they come out and say, well, I hate his tie. His tie was made by communists. And, you know.
And then, you know, wondering if there's going to be any outbursts stirring. You know, I don't know. I mean, it could really go either way. I mean, I still really believe that despite the quote-unquote new civility, that the Republicans still have it in them to be fucking assholes, you know, during the State of the Union address. And, it wasn't the State of the Union that Joe Wilson yelled out. That was during the healthcare speech, you know, in the fall of 2009, wasn't it?
No, it was State of the Union.
It was State of the Union.
Yeah, that was why it was so fucking despicable.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Wasn't it?
I think, I want to say that it was the joint session for his September healthcare thing, September of 2009. Hmm. Yeah. We're smart.
Still, it's a fucking douchebag thing to say.
Yeah, it really is. It really was. Well, I mean, and, you know, it's really exciting because I don't know if you saw the news the last 24 hours, but Palin's got people in Iowa now. She's dispatched her clown car to Iowa to put out feelers for grassroots organizations who will support her. And who else is in Iowa? Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, my God. Please, God.
Yeah.
We can't be that lucky.
I know. I know. And you know what? I think it was John Ziegler, who's like one of the biggest Palin sycophants, who actually believes he was kind of ambivalent. He didn't think that she was really going to run, or he wasn't sure. And then now he's absolutely convinced after seeing the Hannity appearance that she's going to do it.
No, please, God.
Yeah. And it's going to be, I mean, to have Palin and Bachmann running up against, you know, Huckabee and Romney and Milquetoast Tim Pawlenty. I mean, it's just going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, the collision course that's going to. It's going to be like just watching a nonstop, you know, slow motion train wreck. The whole thing.
Because there's not a name in that batch that doesn't. I mean, Romney is on the fringe of it, but there's really not a name in that batch that isn't just so paleolithic in its I mean, you cannot hold up a President Obama against any of those people you named and see a Republican candidate bringing us, you know, keeping us in the 21st century. All they care about is revision, is you know, going back, like repealing. Pawlenty said he'd repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Ugh.
He would reinstate it. I mean, they're literally that psychotic about putting things back the way they were. And that's just not America. You can't run on that shit anymore. Without a Karl Rove, a dedicated evil imp, you know, doing nothing but that sort of messaging, that sort of message You know, that sort of awful push pulling and stuff like that, they will not be able to, they won't be able to run and succeed on a platform that's all anti, you know, modernism. Yay! You can't do it. Yeah. Not in 2012.
The question is whether or not there's enough blogosphere to contain all of the
dumb, stupid
awfulness that's going to come from presidential candidate Sarah Palin and presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, for God's sake. Michelle Bachmann, who wants to somehow repeal the Senate. I don't know how one repeals the entire Senate.
Oh, she's smart.
Repeal the
Senate. You can just look in her eyes and see the voluminous dumb stupid in that face. I mean, she just does not look. She looks as stupid as she is.
Right.
She just looks. There's something deranged about that woman. Just a clown. Just an absolute clown. What the hell goes on in Minnesota? Christ's sake.
I don't know. Minnesota's got kind of a track record of weird political candidates. But, I mean, you can only blame for Michelle Bachmann. She must be in this
wingnut central
district. Yeah, like the munchkin land of
like
Minnesota.
A standard, you know, just a slice of her congressional district. I'd love to
like maybe if like Twin Peaks was located in Minnesota. That's where that's Michelle Bachmann's district. Yeah.
Retard land. I'd love to meet the, you know, it's all probably older kind of baby boomer with their, you know, shorts and black socks, and the women are all sort of rotund and spend most of their time in the kitchen, you know, but just sort of very 1950s, kind of scared of black people, don't like the Jews, you know, it's got to be because, I mean, Al Franken, for Christ's sake, I mean, it's two massive extremes there.
Yeah.
The neighborhood he grew up in Minnesota was super progressive and liberal. And I don't understand how a state can contain that big a diversity. You know, Al Franken on one hand and fucking Michelle Bachmann on the other.
Yeah. And Jesse Ventura was the governor of Minnesota for a while there.
Yeah. What the fuck's happened to him? Now he's all Mr. Conspiracy Theory.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? He was so on the right track there for about 5 minutes. For about 5 minutes, the stars aligned, and Jesse Ventura had some worthwhile things to say. And then suddenly, he's like, 9/11 was an inside job. And he really went down that Alex Jones path.
Yeah.
But before we...
Anybody that can say that with a straight face about 9/11 should just never, ever be taken seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is just the most retarded thing I've ever heard
right.
of all conspiracy theories. I mean, the JFK and everything else I can buy, I can understand. I don't buy into any of it. But the 9/11 inside job thing is the most ludicrous bullshit I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's plausible and where you can kind of see a little bit of smoke is the fact that, well, there was a PDB that happened in early August of 2001.
And you just have to look at Bush and go, oh. Yeah, right. I get it now.
Fucking PDPs. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so there was some knowledge that there would be an attack, but there's no indication that they had specific intelligence saying that it's going to be in September, and it's going to happen in New York, and that it wasn't like it was an imminent attack on the way. Now, that said, it was highly incompetent of them to not take any action. I mean, Richard Clark ran around the White House like an insane man for most of the transition and 2001, screaming about Al Qaeda, and no one would pay attention to him. So there was a lot of a lot of attention being paid by people, smart people, and the Bushies didn't want any part of it.
They had their own plan. They had their own agenda. They thought the Clintons were chasing smoke with Al Qaeda. I mean, Condoleezza Rice had an incoming briefing when they first got there, and I think it was still Sandy Berger at the time, sat down and said, look, your number one problem, your number one national security issue for your entire administration is going to be Al Qaeda and Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And she said, up your ass with a piece of grass, and just ignored it completely and said, we're going to worry about missile defense.
Right.
And that was their agenda, the missile defense. And whoops. Didn't work out. So yeah, massive incompetence. But I don't think there was any. I don't think even if Cheney got a report from Halliburton saying, "Hey, imminent war. You know, imminent attack on the way. Good for business. You know, buy stock because we're going to be, you know, funding a new war here pretty soon. I don't even think in that case they would have purposely ignored it.
And did they exploit it to go to war in Iraq? Yes, they did.
Well, sure.
Yes, they did, because it was I can be very cynical about politics, and this is about as cynical as I get. They clearly went to war in Iraq. At least the political end of the White House, the Bush White House, wanted to go to war in Iraq in order to have a commander in chief for the 2004 election.
I think they would have done that. I mean, they were talking about regime change from day one, before 9/11. They were the center for one of these fucking neocon think tanks, Center for New American Jackasses or whatever, had a report circulating the Beltway way, way ahead of 9/11, recommending regime change in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless. I mean, so, yeah, it was absolutely – they drew a dotted line between 9/11 and Iraq on purpose. But I think it just had a number of reasons.
Yeah. Well, no, there was a confluence of different influences as far as Iraq goes. And it was – you had the neocons who threw – since the end of the first Iraq war had been strategizing how to overthrow Saddam. And so that was the policy for a New American Century group. And that was happening all throughout the 90s, including that, that famous – memorandum about, we need a Pearl Harbor incident in order to do it.
Yeah.
And then, which again lends itself to the crazy conspiracy theories about 9/11. But there's nothing really there as far as one leading to the other. But so you had neocons, which include Rumsfeld, which include Wolfowitz, which include Bill Kristol, which includes Dick Cheney. And then you had the Karl Rove wing of the Bush group, who wanted to do this, and Bush even intimated this to Mickey Herskowitz, who was his, a fairly reputable biographer who was ghostwriting Bush's autobiography at the time, and had discussed how, George W. Bush was talking about writing the mistakes of his father's presidency. He was saying, well, my father, should have, gone all the way to Baghdad because he would have been seen as commander-in-chief. And he would have been reelected, and he would have been able to get all of his, all of his policies passed through Congress. And I'm not going to make that same mistake myself.
Mm-hmm. Even though at the time it was the prudent and wise thing to do to not oust.
Of course, and even
point was, the vacuum is worse than the guy.
Yeah, and even Dick Cheney agreed with that. I mean, was the saner Dick Cheney. The saner Dick Cheney who we kind of witnessed in an interview this week, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But, yeah, so there you go. So I don't know how we
time
got off
for
on
a soap plug.
Yeah, we got to talk about some soap here. Let's talk about soap. Where's my Bubble Genius music? Oh, there we go. Hey, Bubble Genius. Of course, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. Brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. That's BubbleGenius, full stop, COM. It's been a while since we did that. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, we haven't heard from full stop guy for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that always reminds me of one of our previous sponsors, Pomegranate Journeys, who were sold. They were actually bought up by a much larger... And bully to them. Congratulations.
Yeah,
they were bought up by a much larger travel agency. And so they're they're on permanent vacation. Good for them. That's
awesome.
Outstanding. And it was because of their association with this show, is what I like to tell myself. But anyway.
That's right.
So we are brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius, hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. Brand new commercial from Bubble Genius this week. And I think I'm going to play that because I'm actually fumbling around with my buttons here. I'm not quite as organized as I'd like to be today. So, brand new Bubble Genius commercial. Here we go.
Welcome to Bubble Genius, vegan-friendly bath and body.
Hi, you got to help me. I need something for my girlfriend, Valentine's Day.
Oh, I feel your pain, sir. Here's something she should love. It's our Shake Your Bonbon.
No. She warned me. No candy. She's worried about her butt.
This is 100% soap. Nothing fattening about our bonbon soaps in a heart-shaped box. Or if you want something a little smaller, how about this?
It's cute, but no candy. Do I have to spell it out for you?
Spell it out is exactly right. This is our Conversation Heart Soap, a favorite of the LA Times. No candy, soap. We're a soap shop, man.
Wow, this is cute. And it smells really good. Give me a dozen.
Here you are, sir. And happy Valentine's Day.
I'm hungry now. Got any candy?
We're a soap comp... Here, have a Mentos.
Thanks.
Bubble Genius for your Valentine.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yes, and do that, for God's sake. If you're listening to the MP3 in your browser, what the hell is wrong with you? Go over to iTunes. Go there now and stop the show. We'll wait. You can stop the show. We'll hold on for you to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It'll download automatically, and maybe one of these days I'll create an RSS feed or something for the actual show outside of iTunes for those of you who don't like Apple for some crazy reason.
It will download automatically. I subscribe myself, and because I'm not much with the I anything, I don't have an iPod, I don't have an I anything. I was running the iTunes the other day and didn't notice that all these old podcasts were incoming. And one of them just started playing, and there's my I'm listening to myself come out of my computer, and I was mortified. So it will download by itself, and you'll have us everywhere you go. So do that.
Oh, yeah, and thanks to Bubble Genius. They sent – remember last week, somehow I think during the – maybe it was in the commercial for Bubble Genius. We were talking about Ernie Kovacs, and they sent me an Ernie Kovacs soap. It was like instantaneous. So we're talking about Ernie Kovacs. Suddenly in the mail I get an Ernie Kovacs soap, which again is
– Well, I got me some of that deodorant that you like, and I got a John Wilkes Booth soap.
Nice, which – You might not have any qualms about scrubbing your taint with the John Wilkes.
No, I will enjoy giving the South 40 a good workout with the John Wilkes Booth's face.
Yeah.
That son of a bitch.
I also received a Bubble Genius catalog. They actually have a finely printed catalog book here.
Yeah, I got one too.
And one of the things they offer at Bubble Genius here are tailor-made soaps. So if you have like a special occasion or something that you want to commemorate in soap form, they can make custom molds and create custom soaps for you. Like I'm looking here in the catalog, they've got like a Viking hat soap, like a Viking helmet with the big horns. Nice. They've got like an Iron Man soap, which looks like Iron Man's head.
Iron Man the superhero?
Yeah, Iron Man the superhero. Yeah. And then, you know, whenever we talk about getting custom soaps, like your John Wilkes Booth soap or my Ernie Kovacs soap, it's like a photograph printed inside the soap. So it's not they're not sculpting like John Wilkes Booth's head for you.
But I think it's printed on, I don't know how they do it. I don't know what the technology is, but it eventually will wear down to, I mean, like you can, I think you can, I mean, it's not like a picture is going to fall out of your soap into your shower, right?
Yeah, no.
I think it'll decompose naturally.
That's right. That's right.
Decompose.
And of course, And I'll get an email in about, 2 hours from now, just suggesting that I'm completely wrong and that there is a piece of paper in there. So I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know exactly.
I'm probably completely. Yeah. I don't know how soap works. I'm just happy to use it. Yeah. I don't need to understand how the technology works.
But use that Pit Stop soap or the Pit Stop deodorant because it's outstanding. It smells really good.
The next time I have to be anywhere where anyone can smell me, I will.
Yeah.
That's few and far between, though. So I live in my perpetual hermit cave. You know what clips we should play next week is anything from the TV show Soap. That was a great show.
Oh, yeah.
With
Jesus.
Richard Mulligan and Catherine Hellman and Billy Crystal?
Oh, yeah. Billy Crystal was on there. But one of the first, I think he played one of the first gay characters in television.
Yeah, I think it was the first. Yeah. That was a funny show.
Yeah, it was. In fact, I need to go back and just reacclimate myself to that show and refamiliarize because it was so long ago, and it's a show that you don't really consider in your sort of your pantheon of favorite shows, but it was an outstanding show. Soap.
Yeah, 1977 and 1981.
So
it's on Netflix. Watch now, the streaming on Netflix. You can do it.
Yeah,
right now.
And you know what show that I started to watch a little bit? It was the first season, and they did a sort of a half season. Second season, which is on Oh, shoot. What network is it? FX. It's called Men of a Certain Age. It's Ray Romano and Scott Bakula.
Right. And is he good?
It was good, yeah. And it's, but it's depressing. Is why. As a middle-aged man, it's relatable and highly depressing. But good.
Good. So I've been rewatching all my box set DVDs of Wise Guy. This is one of my favorite shows of all time when I was a kid, Wise Guy.
Yeah.
That was a great show. Poor Ken Wall. He's like crazy now.
Yeah. And you know what I noticed? You know what I watched a while back, and at least I saw a couple of episodes of it, was The Greatest American Hero.
Oh, Jesus.
And you know what? It occurred to me that Robert Culp in that show.
Funnier than fuck.
Funnier than hell. But he came off as, in this episode at least, the one episode that I saw recently, he came off as screamingly gay and then also like really, really coked up. I mean, just really hyperactive, just over the top. Like, he was absolutely, absolutely on cocaine.
Really?
I mean, just that's what it seemed like. I mean, I don't have any independent verification of that.
Was he reputed to be a big coke?
Well, I mean, all those guys. I mean, and of course, what's-his-face, who played William Catt, had a big coke problem.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, here's some interesting trivia about that show. I don't know what season you were watching, but in the either halfway through the first season or just for the entire second season, they changed the Greatest American Hero's character's last name. It started out when the show first aired, it was Hinckley.
Yeah.
And that was when Reagan was shot, so they changed it to Hanley.
Yeah,
like right in the middle of the run. I remember very clearly one of my clearest memories from childhood, me and my dad watching Greatest American Hero, and the first episode where one of the teenage kids, because he was a teacher, right? One of the kids said, "Hey, Mr. Hanley." And me and my dad said, "What? That's not right." And then we figured it was, "Oh, Hinckley. Oh, we get it now."
Yeah.
You know, like having a character's last name was Wilkes Booth, I guess.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Mr. Hanley.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty lame.
And by the way, just so I don't get sued, that's what I heard about William Catt. I don't have actual evidence. I don't have evidence indicating that, you know, I don't have a coke vial with his DNA on it or something like that.
DNA.
But yeah, that's what I heard. William Catt.
Starting to look like somebody's got Todd Palin's DNA. Have you seen this from the Inquirer about maybe he's been fucking a masseuse in Wasilla there?
Really?
Yeah. The Inquirer, you know, they're kind of serious business now. One of their guys got nominated for a fucking Pulitzer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. That'd be great if Todd was fucking around.
Well,
yeah, people said they got him coming and going at all times of night to this full-service masseuse.
Todd Palin, the first dude. You know what? I think that was one of the first things that I heard out of Sarah Palin's mouth that made me completely dislike her. When she was calling Todd Palin the first dude.
Yeah.
Shut up. You know, and we would be remiss if we didn't play at least one clip from the Hannity interview. So I found a relatively decent one. And you're going to love this one. You're going to love it. Listen to this.
I Googled your name, and I put in the words Governor Sarah Palin, Tucson shooting. And
oh, that's good.
I hate Hannity.
Hannity's so terrible.
A shithead.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a shill. I mean, and I don't think he even cares that he's such a shill. I mean, he's just there are wingnut cable news guys and wingnut AM radio guys, and Hannity is just so on his own track because he is just anyone will come along and say any sort of flibbity flu, and this guy, you know, I mean, Sarah Palin come on and literally say, "Well, Sean, flibbity flu," and Sean Hannity go, "Oh yes, you're right, you're exactly right with the flibbity flu." Yeah, exactly.
He's just so patently dishonest. I mean, among all the giant inflated talking heads, he is just the most patently dishonest and shamefacedly about it. Non-shamefacedly, just absolutely balls out lies all the time and knows it.
Yeah.
He knows he's doing it. He knows how his production department cobbles this shit together that they play. He's absolutely aware of it, and he does not care. And that makes him an absolutely despicable human being.
Yeah, yeah. And I
just would punch him right in that giant face.
That's right. And he's the one who Olbermann has hinted – On the air, Olbermann has basically said that Sean Hannity is very much full of shit. Like Sean Hannity, oh, yeah. And Sean Hannity's just, he knows it. And he knows that he's playing a part for the cash. He's just cashing in on the popularity of Wingnut Radio and Wingnut Cable News. And that, that's his whole thing. And he's just a big faker. I talk about Glenn Beck being a faker. This guy puts Glenn Beck to shame. Sean Hannity is a huge faker. And this just comes off. I mean, and you can see it. It's so transparent.
Yeah. And just, I mean, it's despicable.
And he's just so kissed Palin's ass. Listen to
this. And it came up nearly 10,000 times in 10,000 instances where you connected to this. When did you first realize you were being connected to this tragedy?
And by the way, that's the most research that Hannity has ever done, Googled something.
Yeah.
The best evidence that he's ever presented on that show, by the way.
Well, right away, unfortunately, and not just me, and this isn't about me, and my response.
So self-conscious. So, oh my God. This is just.
Not about me.
Not about me.
Really?
But I'm about to.
I so thought it was.
I'm about to make it about me.
Yeah.
With that trifecta thing.
What in the. I'm so averse to her voice. It just gives me the fucking chills, just in a bad way.
That's why I play it. Because I know you love it so.
Bastard.
I know.
It's after this horrendous event, and in my response, I talked about defending those who were innocent, had nothing to do with the shooting, and my defense wasn't self-defense. It was defending those who were...
What had nothing to do with the I don't know. What?
With the shooting.
You know what? She's got on the other side of the camera, she's got a refrigerator with magnets on it that spell out different words. And she just you know what she sounds like? She sounds like an eighth grader bullshitting an essay exam.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. She's just picking out things and she's working in the word preposterous where she can.
Yeah.
You know, just because it sounds good.
Falsely accused. I found out right away because when I started tuning in to hear, well, who did this, and names were not given, but I read my name in the reports, and then I read Rush Limbaugh, and then soon your name, Sean, and Mark Levin, and soon Tea Party Patriots, and soon the entire state of Arizona was being falsely accused of somehow being accessories to...
So all of this... She's insisting that all of these names, including the entire state of Arizona, the whole state, was named before Jared Lauder was.
Yeah.
Really? Really?
Yeah, Sarah? She didn't read any of that. I mean, somebody tweeted her or sent her a text on her little BlackBerry, hey, somewhere on the blogosphere or something, we just saw your name in connection with this, and that's what, I mean, no, I can't talk about her. I swear. I can't talk about her. She's just so fucking pointless.
Yeah.
She's just so pointless. There is no point to her.
So far out of her depth. And you know what? Oh. That's what's going to make the presidential run so hilarious. Because it's just going to be more of this. It's going to be more of this. It's going to be an entertainment. It's going to be like a nonstop Three Stooges fix the plumbing sketch.
Correct.
You know, is exactly what it's going
to
be.
To this horrendous, horrendous crime. That is why I was puzzled at first as to why, before facts were even gathered, why it would be that the mainstream media would start accusing and using such a tragedy for what appeared to be right off the bat some political gain.
Yeah, I didn't particularly.
Okay, see, there are a couple things here because she's going to go on, and I'm not going to play it. That's enough of Sarah Palin.
Thank you.
But you know, she goes on to say later that they want to silence me. They want to shut me up. Well, I'm not going to sit down and shut up. Well, you know what, Sarah? They would like nothing more for you to be on their show. I mean, that's all anyone wants. Do you think that for a second anyone on any network anywhere would turn down Sarah Palin for 2 hours? I mean, Sarah Palin could get 2 hours on NBC doing nothing but talking. Talking.
Right.
Because it would be huge ratings, and it would be hilarious. Yeah. Hilarious to listen to that.
Oh, but we're trying to shut her up.
We're trying to shut her up, right?
We've been begging for, since 2008, have a press conference. Never given a single press conference. Have a press conference.
On top of the fact that here she's constantly talking about the mainstream media. Notice that she has made some progress. She did say mainstream media, not lamestream media. Yeah, like a fucking tween girl, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And but look, I mean, how much more mainstream do you get than Fox News Channel, the highest rated cable news network on cable?
Right. You can't have it both ways. You can't be mainstream. You can't be the most, the highest rated, and not be mainstream.
How much media
what
does
she needs is liberal media,
right?
Which there is none. It's, you know, there's corporate media who have a profit motive in scandal.
Yeah.
That's what I understand. Like they think that even the most liberal media outlet, like the, say the New York Times, if Obama was caught, you know, literally with his pants down, a la Bill Clinton, or was proven to be passing nuclear secrets to the, you know, to the Russian mafia. You don't think the New York Times would run as just as big a headline story as everybody else?
That's
it's
right.
Scandal and blood that sells newspapers and, yeah, and media.
That's right.
So my ass, liberal media.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's profit exactly right. Media. And if there's one thing that we, that you and I especially know about liberals is that they don't give a shit when it comes to, you know, when it comes to ratings and when it comes to news reporting. We will throw our own people under a bus so damn quickly if it means, you know, career advancements or if it even just for the very basic notion of journalistic integrity.
Right.
You know, no one cares. No one's getting, no one. I mean, it comes down to a choice between advancing your career or, you know, maintaining some sort of integrity or advancing an agenda. The former always wins out.
Of course.
Over the agenda. You think for a second that Tom Brokaw has an agenda? Tom Brokaw, are you kidding me?
Right. He's sitting down in his man cave somewhere thinking, oh, how can I gin up some controversy here to, you know, liberal media?
No. Yeah, I'm not even sure Tom Brokaw can pronounce liberal agenda.
Not anymore.
liberal agenda.
Seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, he just gets worse. And as which, I always go back to this with Tom Brokaw. I just wonder how the hell a guy with such an awful speech impediment can elevate himself to the network news anchor position.
But, you know. Live the dream, Tom.
But I digress. Speaking of pronunciations and weird language, Rush Limbaugh was hilarious. It was just so goddamn funny yesterday because he did a Chinese, stereotypical Chinese Ching Chong voice on the air twice.
Oh, that's...
Did you hear this? This is Rush Limbaugh yesterday on his show talking about that.
Never mind. We're not going to jip Fox. I wanted to jip it because Hu Jintao, he was speaking and they weren't translating.
No.
They normally, you know, some translator every couple of words, but Hu Jintao was just going ching chong ching chong 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 ching chong ching ba 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 ching chong ching
ching ching
ching ching ching ching ching ching.
Wow.
Nobody was translating.
And there you go. Wow. And there's the most popular political talk show host in the world right there.
What's scary about that is that there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of listeners of his just rolling on the floor to that. Just gripping their fat, you know, Doritos-filled bellies, just rolling around in their Hanes My Way underpants and just all laughing just with their teeth showing over that.
His Ching Chong voice, it's funny.
Funniest
his Chinese
thing
Chinese
ever
people
heard.
Talk funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, what a spaz. What a piece of shit he is.
Now, see, here's the difference. Here's the difference between conservative comedy and real comedy.
Yeah, conservative every other comedy. Kind of comedy.
And every other kind of comedy, exactly. Yeah. Conservative comedy, Ching Chong voices are hilarious, just in and of themselves. We're going to do this because it's funny, which also coincides with, I don't know, kindergarten funny.
Yeah.
The real funny, real comedy is making fun of people who think Ching Chong voices are funny.
Yeah, who are different in any way. I mean, it just go after it.
That's right.
Yeah. That's why there's no such thing as real conservative humor. I mean, it just doesn't exist. It's awful.
Yeah. So to you and I, satirizing and making fun of Rush Limbaugh, who thinks Ching Chong voices are funny, that's what we find funny. Right. Rush Limbaugh just finds the voice funny. It's yeah. it's satire versus, you know, second grade recess comedy.
Yeah. Dookie jokes.
That's right. Dookie jokes. Pull Dookie my finger. Jokes. You know, right. This is Rush Limbaugh. The, you know, who for Hilarious. The longest period of time was the, right, the de facto leader of the Republican Party. Here, he continues on.
Hi, and welcome back, Rush Limbaugh. I have to admit I'm amused by this. Probably very few other people are, but
I doubt that, Rush.
Yeah.
A lot more people than I think any of us would like to acknowledge thought that was hilarious. And you're going to do it again, so why not?
I am. During our obscene profit timeout, I'm watching the news conference between President Obama and Chinese Chaicom leader Hu Jintao. And I've not seen this before. Hu Jintao is speaking and speaking with no translator. They wait till he finishes.
Mm.
And then they read what he says in toto. And, of course, we don't know. Translator could be making it all up. Hu Jintao could be telling us. Who knows what he could be saying to us? The translator is saying, we want to work together. Two countries in the world. China is developing country. America, developed country, but not for long. Mm. He didn't say that. But I'm fascinated. No. I'm listening to this.
Okay, so you know, so that time he didn't do the
chinchorro. The translators are provided by our State Department. You fat piece of fucking ass.
I mean, at least he didn't do the Ching Chong voice that time. He did the more. He did the Gabe Kaplan. Remember, we did that Welcome Back, Cotter clip a couple of weeks ago, where Gabe yeah. Kaplan, very very racist, goes. You know, he does the Chinese guy voice. You know. And we played it. And the reason we played it is to make fun of that brand of sort of outdated comedy.
Yeah,
like, talk
I mean,
about that.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was okay back then.
That's right.
And frankly, I don't think I give Jewish comedians a wide berth on racism. I just think they're sort of entitled to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're sort of entitled to mock the entire world after what the Jews have been through. So
that's right.
They just don't offend me. The what used to what offends me now liberally is the old Bugs Bunny cartoons from during the war that were basically just propaganda with the little Chinaman with the, you know,
the giant
the
teeth
big slope hat on. And just, you know, it's just ridiculous.
Giant teeth and the big Coke bottle glasses. And
That was pretty foul.
But I mean, this is why conservatives aren't funny, because they can't get beyond that first layer. That first layer of comedy. That's not even real comedy.
Yeah.
And to get any further,
just pointing your finger and laughing at someone who's different than you. That's Republican comedy.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Rush Limbaugh was a liberal talk show host, the conservative Rush Limbaugh would make fun of Rush Limbaugh's deaf guy voice. And mock Rush Limbaugh's deaf guy voice. Yeah, right. And that would be hysterical. But it's not the way it is. That's not the way it is. So, I mean, Rush Limbaugh would make fun of Rush Limbaugh's voice.
Correct.
Is what we're saying. Because they have no concept of what's funny.
Correct.
So there. And so, changing subjects to health care. The Republicans voted to repeal health care reform. Completely superficial cosmetic vote last night. To repeal health care reform. Complete and total waste of time. For fiscal conservatives to waste all of that time, money and energy, you know, for something that never had a chance of passing. Passed in the House.
Entirely symbolic.
Exactly. Symbolic. Would never pass the Senate. And even if it did, you know, even if Michelle Bachmann was able to somehow repeal the Senate, what the fuck that means. The president would never sign into law. He'd totally veto it. He'd veto it with prejudice. He would veto it before it even reached his desk. He'd be writing veto with his pen before it even actually appeared on the Resolute desk.
Right.
Right.
Just get like a veto gun, like a scope rifle with a, you know, you could shoot it as it's coming
shoot
across.
Shoot it. That's right. A veto gun.
Pow! And then the thing just says veto on it. You go, ah! Right.
Like a paintball gun that would spell the word veto. Yeah. As it's on its way up Pennsylvania
Avenue. Veto bazooka.
Yeah, right. Right.
You've been vetoed, bitches.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
So, you know, and I, in the process of looking at this and kind of examining or re-examining the Republican opposition to, you know, what they like to call Obamacare, which I actually have no problem with. Call it Obamacare because, you know what, it's going to be hugely popular as soon as it goes into effect.
It's going to be one of his legacies.
That's right.
Go ahead and brand it for us. Thanks.
Yeah, that's
right.
Stupid
asses.
And by the way, firebaggers, you're a family of four making $52,000 a year. Obamacare is going to give you $10,000 a year. $10,000 a year to put towards your premiums. And you're going to hate this?
Though.
Yeah, job killing. It's going to be terrible. Terrible thing.
Job killer.
That's right. And it's not liberal either. Not liberal to give middle-class families $10,000 a year? No, that's not liberal. That's one of the biggest entitlement programs since Medicare. It's the biggest since Medicare.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's not liberal. It's terrible. Bad, 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 bad.
Job killer.
But you know what else for the conservatives listening in and trolling the show?
Yeah.
Dick Cheney, and I wrote about this for the Huffington Post, so if you've been following that, this is not news. But nevertheless, Dick Cheney is still alive because of socialized medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Because that thing, that Darth Vader mechanism that he's wearing around his chest, it's literally Darth Vader. You know, Darth Vader's got that breathing apparatus, that square, that box. Looks like a fuse box on his chest. Dick Cheney's got the exact...
punch buttons.
Yeah, exactly, with the punch buttons and the toggle on there and the little lights. Yeah. Dick Cheney's got practically the exact same thing. He's got to wear a vest that has a unit, a mechanized unit in it, with wires that go into his skin and then through the perineal layers and then between his ribs and then into a gigantic, it's literally like the size. It's like the size of a 1984 Walkman that's in there. I mean, it looks like a miniaturized proton pack from Ghostbusters in Cheney's chest, right?
And it's wearing an unlicensed photon accelerator on our back.
And he's got this in his chest, and he has to wear this in order to survive. It's what pumps.
Forever?
Yeah. If this were to short out, that'd be it. That'd be it. It's called the left ventricular assist device, the LVAD.
Oh, of course. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to fly out to Jackson Hole with the world's largest microwave oven. And I'm going to put it in the back of a pickup, and I'm going to pull up to the back of Cheney's house, and I'm going to run that microwave oven for about 20 minutes, and he'll be deader than disco.
Well, we're not really saying that. See, we're satirizing people saying, fantasizing about, you know, deactivating Cheney's.
Yes, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not literally going to try and assassinate that man with a microwave oven. Just so you know.
With this a joke,
not
please.
Literally going to try and kill Vice President Cheney with a microwave oven.
Can we laugh yet? Is it too soon? Really?
I don't think using a microwave on Cheney's Darth Vader device is anywhere near Tucson.
That's right. So let's.
Plus, that bitch has got it coming.
Let's talk about the LVAD device, which was developed by the National Institutes of Health.
Oh, they do good work.
For the last 50 years, you know, they were trying to develop an artificial heart. And this is what they came up with. And as you may or may not know, the National Institutes of Health are taxpayer funded.
Wah, wah.
So Dick Cheney is only alive because of socialized medicine.
Oh, dear.
Dick Cheney.
Got him there.
Dick Cheney. And, of course, the comment I'm getting the most often at the Huffington Post is that it's an argument against socialized medicine and that it's actually helping Cheney.
There is that.
But yeah, there you go. And so what we can deduce from this is that, you know, socialized medicine, redistribution of wealth is keeping Dick Cheney alive, keeping the sand pumping through Dick Cheney's veins, you know.
The sharp razor-like corpuscles.
And on top of that, here's some big-time history. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's only going back, you know, the last 50 years that we're developing this with taxpayer funding, right? The founding fathers, literally the founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution, people involved with the actual creation of the United States of America. In July of 1798, the Fifth Congress passed and President John Adams signed into law what is called an Act for the Relief of Sick and Disabled Seamen. The law authorized the creation of a government-operated marine hospital service and mandated that privately employed sailors be required to purchase health care insurance.
Sweet.
1798.
Yeah, didn't Thomas Jefferson, wasn't that Thomas Jefferson's thing?
Jefferson was the president. John Adams. Who was actually conservative. I mean, John Adams was a conservative of his day.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Signed it into law. Healthcare mandate, which isn't too far beyond the realms of possibility, because as we know, anyone who follows the real world, the mandate, the healthcare mandate, was a conservative idea and was actually proposed by who? Bob Dole.
Yeah.
Proposed by Chuck Grassley. Right?
Grassley.
And the Overton window has moved so far to the right that it's actually become, you know, a liberal idea.
Overton window. You just plugged Beck's book for him.
Yeah. Well, Beck stole that. Yeah.
Well, yes.
But 1798.
I saw it in paperback the other day.
Goes all the way back to 1798. What, Beck's awful book?
Yeah.
Next to the 9 other books that he published last week?
Yeah, right. Yeah, the guy's got a new book out every 12 days.
God, I was in the bookstore and I passed by the family therapy section or whatever the section for the, like, you know, where if you're married and you're having troubles with your marriage or troubles raising your kids, there is a Glenn Beck book in that section.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck was some child psychologist, marriage therapist guy.
Yeah.
And it's like the picture on the front is like Glenn Beck looking like he's frolicking through a field. Looks like so happy. Yeah. Glenn Beck is so happy.
It's nauseating. It's just a media machine. It's just, yeah. He's got these ghosts, you know, this like a building full of infinite monkeys with typewriters, and they just pound, and every, you know, 36 hours or so, a page flies out that's readable, and they stick that in something, and, you know, a couple months later, a book comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's really
infinite
got
infinite monkeys.
By the way, that's my iPhone. I've got the old phone setting on here, which makes this great.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It vibrates.
You're the guy,
and, right?
The guy I hate at the coffee shop.
That's right, or in the grocery store. This obnoxious noise. But you know what? I'm old. I'm an old man. I can't. And it's, you know what? It's partially because of radio, wearing headphones all the time. I'm like, I've got hearing loss, and so any other, you know. Ringtone on a phone, I'm not going to hear it. It's literally, it has to be like a siren. It has to be the loudest noise possible for me to
Do
hear.
Do you have tinnitus?
No, not really. I just have, like, it needs to be loud. If I'm in a crowded restaurant and you're sitting right across the table from me and you're talking, I'm not hearing you. I'm not hearing you. I can see that you're talking to me, but, you know, I can't hear you.
My dad has really bad tinnitus, and there's just a range of frequencies that he just literally cannot hear. It's the weirdest thing. Something will go off, you know, an alarm or a siren or just any sort of squealing thing, and if it falls in that spectrum, he does not respond to it at all. He can't hear it at all. It's bizarre.
Well, it's not like, I mean, if there's no ambient noise happening, I can hear a pin drop. But if there's ambient noise going on of any level, it suddenly becomes a struggle. It becomes a struggle to hear my own voice, which is completely bizarre. But, I mean, hey, kids, don't put those earbuds in your ear because you're going to go deef.
Deef.
Like me. Don't be like me. Take out your earbuds.
Yeah.
That's what happened. I mean, I was in radio. I did, you know, radio at various levels from, like, I would say around 1989 until 1998 or so, where I was wearing headphones very loudly. And I think that's what did it. I think that's what did it.
Must be.
And then I went to a lot of rock concerts.
A lot of the rock. You enjoyed the rock, did you?
Yeah. And it just, I can't deal with it anymore.
It's my eyes that are going bad.
Is it really?
My ears are fine, yeah.
Yeah. My eyes are there too. I have to wear glasses to see anything that's within the range of about 5 feet around me. I mean, I was reading a label the other day, and I was like, oh, I can't see this. And I'm going, why can't I not see this? And I wasn't wearing my glasses. I had to go grab my glasses to look at the goddamn label, for crying out loud. God.
We're getting old.
Yeah. Oh, here's some news for Firebaggers. Here's some Firebagger news. By the way, here's an accomplishment which they will not give the president credit for. Under this, under new protocol initiated last April and developed over the following months, hospitals partaking in Medicare and Medicaid must now allow all patients to decide visitation rights, as well as who to entrust with making medical decisions on their behalf, regardless of sexual or gender identity.
Nice.
This policy impacts millions of LGBT Americans and their families. The president saw an injustice and felt very strongly about correcting this and has spoken out about it often over the years, says White House Deputy Director of Public Engagement Brian Bond.
Nice. Wrote
this on the White House blog.
That sort of went right under the radar.
Yeah. And, you know, you will never see that. Did you see that on Fire Dog Lake? Or,
no,
I don't
ever go there, so.
Glenn Greenwald's blog? No.
Oh, ooh. Glenn, you're so grumpy.
David Sirota's column? No.
Oh, David.
No, because that would mean they were wrong about the president. Mm-hmm. You know, they would rather say that the president has turned his back or soft-pedaled on LGBT issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he's just like Bush. He's worse than Bush, in fact.
Yeah, sold us out. Corporate sellout.
So I felt the need to pass that along because you'd never know it reading some of the blogs.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't hear that anywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, I was watching Dylan Radigan today, and he had, like, Eric Alterman on, and he had David Sirota on, and, you know, again, perpetuating this myth that, you know, Barack Obama has turned his back on progressive things. You know, like visitation rights for LGBT people in the hospital.
Alterman's right. Douche.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like that guy. I tried to get him on my old radio show.
Uh-huh.
And he just blew me off in such a – he declined in such a dickish way.
Yeah.
That I really just – I took his book. And I had a couple of his books. I immediately took them to the half-price bookstore.
Yeah.
So don't give me any money for these. I just want somebody else to – have them because I don't like this guy anymore.
It was a shame. I mean, he wrote, I read a pretty decent book by him. It was called What Liberal Media.
Yeah.
Which is kind that of a bad, of just not a very good title with a question mark in it. I don't really like being asked a question in the title of a book. I was like, don't stop hectoring me. I don't want to stop asking me your questions on the cover of your book.
Remember that Kids in the Hall sketch about the books on tape that were really scary? And like a guy put the tape in, and the book is called there's a spider on your shoulder, and the guy's driving down the road and he puts the tape in and he goes, oh, look out, there's a spider on your shoulder, and the car crashes into a tree.
right.
That's how I want my book titles. Look out, there's a spider on your shoulder.
Yeah, we are way late today. Way late. Yeah, for
way
a number
late.
Of things.
I have to spend some time with my daughter.
That's right. We're late actually recording the show today, which are apologies, but we're also late with the second Bubble Genius commercial. This is the, as you know, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I love that. I love saying that because it reminds me, makes me feel like we're like an old-timey, golden age
legitimate.
Of television show. Yeah, it feels legitimate. And you know, the only person to do that recently, or relatively recently, was Dana Carvey. Dana Carvey had a sketch show on ABC about 10 years ago. And it was like the Taco Bell Dana Carvey show, I think.
Really?
Yeah. And it was funny.
I remember the show, but I don't remember it being sponsored specifically.
There's some funny stuff on that show. Robert Smigel was on that show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think he did. I think Courage the Cowardly Dog, or Courage the Angry Dog, or whatever that rubber dog that is.
Insult
Comic
Dog.
Yeah, that's it. Courage the Cowardly Dog. That was a cartoon show on Cartoon Network or something. Well, the show is brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com at www.BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And, you know, we talked about the Pit Stop deodorant, which is my favorite hygiene product in the world, which is outstanding. But they've also got a variety of soaps to choose from. Right now they've got their You know, they've got some Valentine's Day soaps that you can get, as we talked about earlier in the show. They've also got Snow Wonder soap, which is in the shape of a snowflake. They can do just about anything, these people. It's unbelievable. Really, I mean, customized soaps. And of course, as you know, this is International Creativity Month. Did you know
I
that?
I did know that.
Yeah,
because I'm creative.
If Bubble Genius invites you to create your very own picture soap, and they'll print your photo or design on water-soluble paper. There you go. See, that's it.
It's water-soluble.
We answered our own question. Okay.
Nailed it.
Water-soluble paper. And it gets embedded in the soap.
See?
And we thought somehow they were printing it on soap. That's what we thought.
No, I got it exactly right. It's water-soluble.
Yeah.
Whatever it is in there, and it'll what I said was that you wouldn't be scrubbing with the soap, and then you end up with this wet piece of photo paper.
Yeah,
was my point. That would not be pleasant. But that's not what it is. It's water soluble.
Be down there clogging up your shower drain, which would be unpleasant.
Yes. The dog hair.
And Bubble Genius brings you. Still talking about the water soluble paper embedded in the soap. If they can print it, they can put it on soap. Test the limits of your imagination during International Creativity Month, the month of January. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They strive to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. And good Lord, we ran out of Bubble Genius music. Let's just start that again. And everything is recyclable, including the shrink wrap protecting the soap. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting their local and business and domestic businesses, while also cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients, vegan ingredients when they can, and when it's accessible. And their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. By the way, I'm going to give them their money back for this commercial.
Yeah.
Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And we are, like I said, we're way late with the show.
Yes.
So we're gonna just wrap up the show now. I know, it's sad and depressing, isn't it?
Oh.
People demanding.
I go see if my daughter's still awake.
The show, demanding the show this week.
Yes.
On Twitter and Facebook and on the blog. And say, where's the show? Where's the show? Well, here's the show.
Here it is.
We didn't talk about Fat Jesus. I've been looking forward to talking about Fat Jesus for a while. Chris Christie.
Oh, Fat Jesus. Oh, and I wanted to talk about the abortion doctor of death, the murdering, you know, kids with scissors abortion doctor. So that's a pleasant topic.
Yeah, that's... Why don't we talk about that while we've got our theme music playing, our happy lounge theme music?
It's a happy, happy topic. The
abortion,
guy
scissors.
Stabbed baby in the neck with scissors.
Nice.
So I wrote Redmond at the I said I IM'd him. I said, oh, this is good for our side.
Yeah.
This is good for the abortion debate. The guy that pulls the babies out and stabs them in the spinal column with a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then, right. And we could play our Price is Right losers.
Poor pro-choice people.
Yeah, it's a good topic. Good topic. We'll talk about that next week. I'll load up some zany sound of some more zany sound effects for that one.
Scissor sharpening.
Yeah, right. We can play the ding sound. Scissor sharpening.
Play something from Edward Scissorhands.
We are now descending deep, deep into the bowels of tastelessness.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We shall be back next Thursday. Probably about the same time. But probably not. Probably maybe a little more. We'll get some consistency here on the recordings of the podcast soon.
Yes.
Drive safely, everyone. See you next week. Bye.